Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This was an absolute bombshell. No one saw it coming. Jeffrey Donaldson was deemed to be at the height of his political success, having led the party back into Stormont, and now the party's in disarray, and his political career would appear to be over.
Northern Ireland politics was thrown into chaos at the weekend when Jeffrey Donaldson was arrested and charged with historical sex offences.
2 weeks ago, he was celebrating St. Patrick's Day in Washington. This week, Sir Jeffrey Donaldson was arrested.
Jeffrey Donaldson and his wife, Eleanor, who's been charged with aiding and abetting on the same case, strenuously deny the charges. But as the news broke on Friday, he resigned as leader of the DUP.
The party chairman has received a letter from Sir Jeffrey Donaldson MP confirming that he has been charged with allegations of a historical nature and indicating that he is stepping down as leader of the Democratic Unionist Party with immediate effect.
So, how did the charges come about?
All prosecutions have to be met by two tests, and that's the evidential test and the public interest test, and then they would decide to prosecute. The unusual thing in this is that the police alone have took the decision to prosecute.
Will the DUP survive this crisis?
His image was being taken off their website within minutes of him saying that he was gone as leader. I mean, he's innocent until proven otherwise, but they have decided, it seems, that at least for now, he's gone. They, you know, are not in any way prepared to be shackled to him at all.
And will new interim leader Gavin Robinson be able to hold the party together?
Gavin Robinson is a very quiet man. He's not someone that's ever expressed any interest in being leader of the DUP under any circumstances, but nobody else wanted that job.
I'm Olivia Peden, and to discuss this huge story, I'm joined by Belfast Telegraph crime correspondent Alison Morris and Northern Ireland editor Sam McBride. Alison and Sam, you're very welcome to the Bell Tell.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This has been an absolute bombshell, to say the least. What were your reactions when this first came out on Friday?
Well, Thursday night was when I started getting messages. And at the start, I thought this is one of those like jokey sort of chainmail things that people do, as much as it wasn't in the slightest bit funny. But I thought this could not be real. And then as time was going on, you'll not be surprised. No, I didn't get to sleep till well into the early hours of the morning trying to suss out. And I was messaging very senior people from the DUP who genuinely, and I don't believe they were telling me lies, knew nothing about it. And I mean nothing. They were as in the dark as the rest of us. By Friday morning, obviously, it became much clearer what had happened and that Jeffrey Donaldson and a woman were facing these charges. There was the emergency party officers meeting called. We knew there was a resignation statement coming. And just, I suppose, for people who don't understand how we work, you know, we couldn't just go ahead and start publishing stuff because this is such a delicate subject and you have so many contempt laws around this and what we can and can't say. And so, like every other newsroom, I am sure in this, you know, not just here in the UK and Ireland, everywhere, lawyers were busy discussing what way can we cover this, what way can we not cover this, what can journalists say, what can they not say. And that went on throughout most of Friday morning. All of that became pretty mute whenever the DUP put out their statement saying that he had resigned and that he was facing charges of historical nature. At which point they had obviously done the job of confirming that beyond any doubt, and that meant that then we had no other choice but to start then looking at new ways to report it while still trying to protect the integrity of the legal process, which is paramount in this.
I was basically the same, and I think that often as journalists we have some sort of insight into what might be coming up. We hear all sorts of rumours. Often they turn out to be wrong or we can't prove them. They don't go anywhere, but we're at least aware of something floating around. In this instance, I knew nothing. I'm not aware of a single journalist who had the slightest sense there have never, to my knowledge, ever been rumours of this nature against Jeffrey Donaldson. And so therefore, this has really left people flabbergasted. Like Alison, I first picked up on this very late on Thursday night. I saw the story on the Daily Mirror website, who broke that this unnamed man at that point, but his age matched Jeffrey Donaldson, had been arrested, had been charged with historic sex crimes. And people were clearly starting to speculate that this could be Donaldson. He had deleted his social media accounts, which is very unusual. His website had gone offline. There was clearly something very odd going on here. And then by Friday morning, I wake up, I had a whole series of messages on my phone, some from friends of mine who aren't particularly who aren't in any way involved in media or politics or anything of that nature, saying, what is going on with Jeffrey Donaldson? Could this be true? And so there was a real sense that this story immediately, even before it broke in the mainstream media, had caught the imagination, if you like, and the horror of the public in a way that most political stories, most crime stories do not do. And throughout that morning, as Alison says, there was lots of attempts by us to try to clarify what's going on and to try to be clear, is this Jeffrey Donaldson? So unlike the situation in England and Wales, the police here do not give us the name of people who have been charged. So it's harder for us to establish who they are. And it was also clear that people in the DUP did not know in many cases what was happening here. Clearly some of them did and had been talking about it overnight, but others, even at quite a senior level, were saying, look, we're getting our information from social media. So you're not in a very good place as a journalist to try to write a story in that context, because you can get this feedback loop where people who you're talking to, who normally are very reliable, are actually just feeding back to you what they get from people who maybe do not know what they're talking about. And then ultimately, this story was confirmed by the DUP. But I think one thing that we can say is that in that intervening period of several hours that morning, on Friday morning, there was a clue, I think, in how many media organisations gave enormous prominence to this story that an unnamed man had been charged. So it was the lead story on our website. I think it was the lead story on RTE's website, the BBC's website, and throughout most of the media. We couldn't name him, but there was a clue there that this was significant.
Also by Thursday night, when in those early hours when I was messaging people from the DUP and they were saying we know nothing about it, but he cleared his whole diary today. So we do know that he was to speak at a DUP business breakfast, and Paul Given had to step in and do that for him. There was no explanation given as to why he wasn't there. He was also had a pre-recorded interview with the BBC that was set up, which he didn't attend. And again, there was some vague excuse as to, you know, some sort of personal matter and why he couldn't attend that. And so his whole diary for the day had been cleared. And that was a major sign. Now, all of these things together, if you take them individually, they wouldn't have been, you know, that unusual a red flag. But taken together, you know, it's pretty clear, I think, to all of us that we were looking at going, this is probably one of the biggest stories that we're going to cover, certainly this year, if not in the last decade.
Alison, Jeffrey Donaldson and his wife were arrested at their Dromore home shortly after 7 a.m. on Thursday. How are these charges playing out now in the aftermath of the arrest?
So I suppose this is where I put my crime reporter hat on. What has happened here, and I'll tell you how this is maybe differs from other historic abuse allegation cases that I've covered, is that usually people would be asked to attend a police station at a certain time by prior arrangement. So you would show up with your solicitor and you would have whatever allegations have been made against the person put to them, and then they would have a chance to defend themselves. That didn't happen in this case. Police actually showed up. I think that Jeffrey Donaldson was as surprised as anyone else when he would have got, you know, a very, very loud knock on the door. You know, the police officers, if they're knocking someone's door at 7 a.m, don't tap it lightly. And that was because there's two people here who are accused, who are a couple. And obviously, if you arrange by prior interview, it could damage the integrity of that interview process because they'd have time to discuss it beforehand. So that is would be, I'm assuming, the police reasoning for doing a sort of surprise morning knock call rather than a prearranged interview. In this case, also by Thursday evening, they had been released, but they had been charged on what is known as a 28-day charge. So a 28-day charge means you are charged by the police and not by the prosecution service. Usually in historic cases, and I don't mean exclusively, but usually in historic cases, what would happen is someone would make an allegation, then the police would bring in that person with their solicitor, they would put the allegations to them, they would record what they had to say, they would then look for other corroboration. So has anyone else ever been told? Does date and times match up? Does venues match up? All of that sort of thing. And then they would compile all that into a big file. That could take 6 months, and they send that to the PPS, and then senior counsel would look over that file and say whether or not there's a strong enough case. The PPS meet, all prosecutions have to be met by two tests, and that's the evidential test and the public interest test, and then they would decide to prosecute. The unusual thing in this is that the police have took the decision to prosecute. That will now go to the PPS. They hadn't had the file on Friday. They hadn't had sight of what evidence the PSNI was presenting in this case. I'm assuming they'll have that file now. Then they'll pore over that and they might ask further questions. For instance, they could go back to the police and say, you've said this, this and this. Could you go back and check for me? Or we need a further interview with that person. We need a further statement from that person, just elaborating on this point. And that could well happen, and that can take quite some time. In the meantime, on the 24th of April, the couple will appear in court. They will appear in Newry Magistrates Court. The charges at that stage will be read to them, but this case is a Crown Court case. So the magistrate's a lower court. It has to go to the Crown Court, which is a higher court, because of the serious nature of the allegations. Geoffrey Donaldson said in his resignation statement to the DUP he intends to strenuously deny these charges, which means this will have to go in front of a jury, and this will be a jury trial. Our courts are incredibly backlogged. There's a long wait for court space for jury trials, which are not the easiest thing to organise. So I would say that this is probably going to take quite some considerable time. What I would say almost with confidence is it'd be unlikely you'd get a Crown Court date for a trial of this nature, definitely before the general election, which I really think that sometimes I feel awful. And people have said to me over the past few days, why do people keep talking about the politics of this when there's a much more bigger personal story? Well, we can't talk about a lot of that detail. As much as I would like to talk to you about it, I can't, because you have to protect the anonymity of complainants in rape cases is for the rest of their life. And in fact, as Sam has written on numerous occasions, till 25 years after they've died, that anonymity stays with them, and they, and only they, have the are able to waive that anonymity. And that is regardless of what the outcome of the criminal process is. You know, whether the case collapses, whether it's guilty, whether it's innocent, regardless of what happens, the anonymity stays with those complainants. So we don't have the right to take that from them. Nobody has the right to take that from them. They will have to make that decision themselves at some stage. And so we're a bit tied as to what we can say about that. And in the meantime, what we can talk quite openly about the political fallout. And what does that mean? And what does that mean for the politics of this place? Whereas there's some aspects of the criminal case that we just can't discuss at this point.
He resigned in line with party policy. Will he lose his knighthood?
Well, he's not going to lose his knighthood unless he's convicted. If he is convicted, almost certainly yes. That would be a matter for the sovereign ultimately. But there is precedent for this with other high-profile politicians who have been found guilty of serious crimes. His position on the Privy Council presumably would go as well. He's someone who is part of that body which formally advises the sovereign, and you know, it's inconceivable that somebody who's convicted of rape would be sitting there. But I think that Alison talked there about some of the difficulties here in terms of trying to talk about something which is much more serious than politics, but we're not able to actually talk about really what's involved in that because it's going to come to court. And one of the really significant things here is there is going to be a jury, as Alison said. That's a jury of people like us who are randomly selected from the population. And it's going to, first of all, be very difficult to get a fair jury, and because he's a high-profile politician, you might have somebody who has said on their social media, I hate the DUP, or whatever it might be. There's all sorts of reasons why that's going to be difficult at the best of times. But it's particularly difficult here because over the last few days on social media, there has basically just been a free-for-all. I think that is in some ways one of the difficulties that we face as a society with social media. We've seen this in other trials, but this is the most high-profile trial, I think, in the age of social media in Northern Ireland. And the law is looking like a bit of an ass right now. And so the police have got the challenge of not being able to go after all these people, but going after some of these people and really throwing the book at them. And the rules on contempt are very, very strict. We understand that as journalists. We have our lawyers read our copy on this, but they're equally applicable to a random member of the public who posts, you know, 50 characters of a tweet. And people just don't seem to get this. And the authorities seem to be struggling to get through to people. They've tried all sorts of campaigns, but it's just not, it's clearly not working.
It's one of the things that just horrifies me, because not only, you know, when you're saying the complainants have the right to anonymity, in terms of contempt, if myself or Sam or you breach the contempt laws, the Attorney General is responsible then for enforcing that, and we would find ourselves very quickly brought up in front of the Attorney General for contempt. the contempt that we're seeing online is actually a police offence. So naming someone who has the right to anonymity is a PSNI job. And, you know, there is definitely, I would say, at this point in time, some of the main offenders, the people who repeatedly do it, despite the fact that they know now, they could not know that what they're doing is wrong. They're the people who should be targeted, because not just does it have an impact on their own lives in terms of the fact that they could end up a criminal record, lose their job, all sorts of other things. It has a real impact on the criminal justice system. And I have covered, I don't know how many of these type of trials over the years, and they are grueling. They are really grueling things. It's not an easy thing to go through, and to have the additional pressure of all this online influence. I mean, we had very similar online activity that went around the Belfast trial, the rugby trial, and that resulted in Justice Gillan being brought in to do an entire overhaul of how our justice system deals with these kind of offences. It got so serious and so out of control. So the last thing we want to do is see a repeat of that, and people put through all that for no apparent reason at all, other than someone wants a few likes on Twitter.
And one other very important element of this is that a lot of people are openly saying Geoffrey Donaldson is guilty. He did it. Clearly that's wrong. We do not have evidence of that. He is innocent in the eyes of the law. And that's not some sort of academic thing. That's true. That's a very important principle of our legal system. He might be found guilty. He might be found innocent. There have been MPs in the past who have been charged with very serious offences, including rape, and have been cleared and are back in the House of in the House of Commons. So what will happen in the trial will happen, and we will report on that to the greatest extent that legally we can. But people should be very, very careful for their own sake, as well as for the sake of justice being done here, in either suggesting that Geoffrey Donaldson is guilty or that such and such a person is the complainant in this case.
Well, legally and morally, as you've already said, we can't say a lot. Although what we can talk about is the political fallout and what this does mean for the DUP. Do you think there is a possibility of a split, even if Gavin Robinson was an ally to Donaldson?
It's absolutely huge. The political fallout has far-reaching ramifications. So I could almost say with certainty that the way our justice system works, this is unlikely to be dealt with before the general election, at which point then you have no DUP MP in Lagan Valley. You have to then find a different candidate to put forward for that seat. Geoffrey Donaldson in that seat, you know, you can't imagine that anyone other than him would be the DUP MP for that area. That means that someone like Saoirse Eastwood, who has been making gradual gains, you know, every election you can see that her vote's gone up while the DUP core vote's gone down, albeit that has always been a safe enough seat. But a lot of that was Geoffrey Donaldson's core vote. And where does that go then? Is the fallout from that Saoirse Eastwood's gain. And then you have East Belfast. And this is where I think it's interesting. You haven't seen any opposition to Gavin Robinson being made interim leader. And Gavin Robinson is a very quiet man. He's not someone that's ever expressed any interest in being leader of the DUP under any circumstances. He's a very family man. He likes to be at home a lot. I don't think he likes the added pressure and the scrutiny that this is going to place on him. But nobody else wanted that job. And the fact is, the stuff that Sam's been writing about in terms of the sea border and the fact that that deal was not what it said to be, and the fact that there's a load of problems coming down the line in relation to that, means that that other side of the DUP, those hardliners, those enemies, those people like Sammy Wilson and Paisley, they're going, let him take it. It's his. Let him take ownership of it. Let him be the fall guy for it. And the fact, if he doesn't, if Naomi Long stands against him in East Belfast and he loses his seat, and Gavin Robinson only has an 1800 majority, it's a very small margin. As well as that, we're hearing that those TUV reform approved candidates are going to run in some of those key constituencies. If someone like that goes in and just takes, even if they took 1,500 votes, 2,000 votes, he would lose his seat, at which point they have to find another leader. And since Arlene Foster lost her leadership of the DUP, that means we've had Arlene Foster, we've had Edwin Poots, we've had Geoffrey Donaldson, we've had Gavin Robinson, and they'll have to find somebody else, a fifth leader, at which point then I think you'll see someone from the hard line step up and win, I'll take it now, but not until all the mess of this is dealt with and belongs to someone else, because they'll say, this was your deal, this was your mess, this is a mess of your making. There you go, Gavin Robinson, you're Nema Pengelly, you deal with that, you caused it. And that means that they can then step in afterwards, because the fact is that they know they're in trouble, but even the opposition that they would have in terms of trying to make any sort of political gain out of this. Someone with a wiser head is when, no, just sit back. Just sit back and let all this play out.
I mean, Gavin Robinson is a very impressive politician as far as the DUP are concerned. He is not everybody's taste in the DUP because he's a bit liberal. He's a bit moderate for a lot of them, but they respect his ability. He is articulate. He's a trained barrister. He's also steeped in politics. I mean, he's 39. He's the youngest leader in the history of the DUP, but he is somebody who from his early 20s was being mentored by Peter Robinson. They're not related, by the way, and that's something that he was keen to point out at one point when Peter Robinson was not flavor of the month. But there is a deep knowledge of politics, of how power works in Northern Ireland. Inside Stormont, he's been a special advisor inside the system. He's been Lord Mayor of Belfast. He's been a councillor in Belfast. He's been MP. He's successfully fought off Naomi Long, and that's a very difficult thing to do. Peter Robinson couldn't do it in his final attempt to do it. And so this is somebody who potentially, if he gets through this stage that he's in right now, could be a much more successful leader of the DUP than Geoffrey Donaldson. I mean, he can speak to a different generation. He's much more urban and much more urbane. He's somebody who understands modern Northern Ireland much better, I think. But he's got a massive challenge on his hand. And the one thing that we know from other political leaders, look at Theresa May, look at Arlene Foster. Sometimes people are seen as very successful as a minister, as a mid-ranking or even quite a senior member of their parties. Once you put them to the very top, it's a very different thing. So we won't actually know how good Gavin Robinson is until we see him in the job for a bit.
Sam, Emma Little Pengelly, she's thrown herself into this new job as Deputy First Minister, and it seems to be going well so far. But what position is she in now?
She's always been in a slightly odd position here because she wasn't elected to the Assembly. She's co-opted in because Geoffrey Donaldson doesn't want to take the seat that he said he would take. It's all a bit messy. Then suddenly they come back and he says, let's have you as Deputy First Minister. And not only does she become Deputy First Minister, but she throws herself into this. She's very popular with a lot of people. She challenges a lot of people's old conceptions of the DUP. She's very liberal in terms of her approach to that over the last couple of months. And then this happens. It'd be wrong to say her protector in Geoffrey Donaldson, but the person who had put her into that post, who trusted her, who had given her his implied authority, if you like, he's gone in the most unimaginable circumstances possible. However, when it comes to the politics of this, Geoffrey Donaldson and Gavin Robinson are from the same side of the DUP, as is Emma Little Pengelly. I don't think there'll be any change there whatsoever. What will change, I think, is that despite what Gavin Robinson would like to happen here, i.e. continue the policy as it is right now, very warm relations with Sinn Féin, big cross-community gestures, really playing down the some of the big controversies like the Irish language, etc., going to play Camogie, all of that stuff that she has done, I think a lot of people in the DUP are very uncomfortable with that. It's one thing working with Sinn Féin. It's another thing looking like you're enjoying working with Sinn Féin. And really, as one member of the DUP said to me, why does there have to be so much glee around this? So that's something that really irks a lot of them. And those people do not have the power to topple Stormont. They don't have the power to topple the deal on the Irish Sea border. That's gone. It's too late for that now. What they can do is put pressure to change the tone of Stormont. And that could be very significant because once you strip away the sort of happy clappy tone and the photo ops and the smiles and all of that stuff that has happened, the big magnanimous gestures, what are you left with? Well, you're left with the problems, the things that we haven't really seen so far, the budget that's shot to bits, the health situation, the education situation, potholes. I mean, just everywhere you look, there are problems. And that potentially could be very significant.
A lot of them, they recognise the fact that in order to preserve the union, they had to go back into Stormont. They had no other chance. Geoffrey Donaldson realised that. Some of them reluctantly do, but I think they'd rather be seen as in Stormont having a battle a day with Sinn Féin, going toe-to-toe with them in the chamber, looking like they're standing up, but they're refusing to allow them to have their agenda pushed first. And instead, obviously, then you've seen... I felt sorry. I thought Emma Little Pengelly was in a terrible position because, on one hand, she has to look statesmanlike. She has to look like she's a good Deputy First Minister and she's taking that role. And on the other hand, she has to look not too chuckle brothers-y like with Michelle O'Neill. And that's a very difficult thing to do. She was being praised mainly by nationalists for showing up and playing Camogie in St Paul's, not by members of her own community. And that was very, very telling. Geoffrey Donaldson was her ally. In fact, she was his ally. I think is a better way to put it, because all during those very difficult Brexit negotiations, when he was coming under fire in terms of the substance of that deal, she was the person standing at the right-hand side of him. She was the person that remained loyal to him throughout that. And he is now gone. And the seat that she occupies is his. He was elected to that MLA seat in Lagan Valley, not her. And she now occupies a seat by a man probably embroiled in one of the biggest political scandals we have ever seen, you know, since the beginning of devolution. And that could not be a comfortable place to occupy.
Gavin Robinson doesn't have the luxury of time on his side with the general election. In principle, Emma Pengelly could sit out until 2027. Yeah. Do you think she would be able to?
The problem is you know, if you were as a member of an organisation and everybody else in that, you know, organisation, be it a social club or whatever, everyone else was slightly hostile to you, how comfortable would you feel staying in that position? She can stay to 2027 if she wants. And will she be Deputy First Minister all the time? I don't know. Gavin Robinson has obviously got a major battle on his hand, an electoral battle on his hand coming down the line. And how he deals with that in the current circumstances will require real strength of character, I think. Emma Little Pengelly, I think, knows. She's not a silly woman. She's an intelligent woman. She's a barrister. She's a well-educated woman. She knows that there's issues here. And, you know, even the day that she was placed into that role as Deputy First Minister, I was standing up at Stormont looking in at the back benches of her own party while Gordon Lyons was praising her and saying, you know, what a great Deputy First Minister she'll be. I could see other people behind her, members of her own party, rolling their eyes, you know, exaggerated yawning, all sorts of things, where you can clearly see that she was not their first choice and not the most popular, and she must feel like someone's sharpening the daggers for her now. But I do think in terms of those hardliners, they have came to the decision that this is our mess, this is theirs, so let them own it, and then we'll come in and sweep in behind it when all this is over.
Sam, does it look like the party can pull together, or could this well be the beginning of the end for the DUP?
I think we should be careful about thinking this is the beginning of the end at this point. The DUP have been through some pretty rotten times over the last, 15 years. It's a pretty ruthless party. Look at how they've dealt with Donaldson, their leader. His image was being taken off their website within minutes of him saying that he was gone as leader. I mean, they are cutting their ties there. He's innocent until proven otherwise, but they have decided, it seems, that at least for now, he's gone. They, you know, are not in any way prepared to be shackled to him at all. And so therefore, that may well work with their voters. Their voters, I think, may well look at this and say, you know what? This sort of stuff, what is now alleged as serious sexual crimes, happens across society, unfortunately, happens in all political backgrounds, all social backgrounds, and sometimes happens with very surprising people and people you didn't expect, you didn't suspect it of them. And so therefore, what can you judge the DUP on? You can judge them on how they react to this. And if what they say is true, that the first they heard of this was late on Thursday, well, what more could they have done? I think a DUP supporter might look at this and say they immediately move to get rid of him. They suspend him. They, you know, do everything they can to say, let's not prejudice a trial. And so that may well work. Having said that, who knows what comes out in a trial? Who knows what comes out between now and that ever actually entering court? There are all sorts of difficulties here. And there's also the element of this, which you could say if you're a member of the DUP or a backer of the DUP, is quite unfair, that with any of these cases, look at the Ulster rugby trial, where those people were cleared of the charges that were against them, but they ultimately had to leave Northern Ireland to continue their careers. There is an element of mud that sticks with these sorts of charges, and that's not a legal thing. That's not me in any way suggesting that Geoffrey Donaldson is anything other than innocent, but that's the reality, I think, of how some people will view this. And if that rubs off on the DUP, his party, or if they want to punish the party, particularly in Lagan Valley, where they're quite vulnerable now, that could be problematic for the party.
Donaldson was the chief salesman of the devolution deal, and we've had Stormont for 8 weeks. Is there a chance that Stormont is vulnerable again?
Stormont is always vulnerable. Its sort of default setting is fragile, and it goes from fragile to being, you know, on the edge of the cliff. Right now, it's not on the edge of the cliff. So that's pretty good as far as Stormont goes in relative terms. But I think that there is an unsettling element to this that will strip away some of that stuff that we've seen over the last 8 weeks. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the DUP will just carry on as if this hadn't happened. And Emma Littlepengelly and the First Minister will simply be, you know, continuing as if this never happened. But I think that's going to be difficult for the DUP to do. To an extent, actually, potentially, depending on what comes out in the trial, could be difficult for Sinn Féin to do. Some of their supporters might not want to see them carrying on in that way. But I think that there were always going to be problems coming down the line for Stormont, regardless of this. I mean, the budgetary situation is grim. Public services are in a really bad way. Not all of that is the fault of those parties. I mean, we've had 2 years without government and only one party has been responsible for that. That's been the DUP. So it's not that that's necessarily their fault in every case, but the reality is they're now responsible for it. And so they were going to have to take tough decisions. For instance, they haven't enough money for what they want to do. Do they cut back or do they raise more money through increasing taxes? Well, they've basically decided to do neither. So they're wanting to spend more, but not raise any more than putting rates up by the rate of inflation, which is in real terms the same as where they are right now. So all of that was going to come to a head at some point. This now, I think, gives an added vulnerability. But I think that both the DUP and Sinn Féin are pretty firmly stuck in Stormont now. Neither is going to walk out easily. It would be a big political problem for both of them for different reasons if they did that. So it's here for the foreseeable future, but for how long beyond that, who knows?
I think that the DUP have enough problems right now going into an election in the middle of a political crisis with everything internally that's going on with their party, with all the issues with the sea border, without also adding a collapsed Assembly lad, and also Reform TV pact that they're saying they're going to put stand candidates. You know, they're not even standing the candidates with any expectation of winning anything. They're just standing it to disturb, and they really could disturb, and they could make sure that then Sinn Féin is returned to, as a result, would you believe, as the sort of, I suppose, the Lundies of the selection, they could, the Sinn Féin is returned as the largest party to Westminster, albeit they don't take their seats in the Commons, and that would make them the largest party in the councils in Northern Ireland, the largest party in terms of representation in the Assembly, and most likely after the election in the South, the largest party in the South, and that would be a very uncomfortable place for unionism to be in. So I don't know whether Jim Allister might have a change of heart coming closer to the election and think that that's maybe not the best idea, but that could also, that's another problem, another fly in the ointment for them that they're going to have to face going into this election. What are they going to do about that hardline opposition?
Sam, Alison, thank you very much. This episode of The Bell Tell was produced by myself, Olivia Peden, along with Graeme Davidson, and the clips you heard were from Sky News and Channel 4.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.